Hello and welcome back to the CBD podcast. Many of you will have heard that on Thursday the 13th of February 2020, the Food Standards Agency released new guidelines for CBD brands and products in the UK market. In this episode, I'll be discussing this new regulation with Dr. Sarah Gaunt, Associate with the Global Regulatory Services, Dr. Parveen Batara, the Regulation and Compliance Lead for the Association for the Cannabinoid Industry, and Shomi Malik, the Development Director at the ACI. The aim of this episode is to shed some light on the FSA announcement and provide the much needed clarity that so many people have been asking for. So stay tuned and enjoy. So thank you guys for coming on. Could you kind of run through what this regulation is and why it's so important for the industry?
Yeah, sure. So as we all know, CBD got reclassified as a novel food in January 2019, and the UK FSA agreed with that. We've been liaising directly with the FSA and other regulatory agencies on how they're going to enforce this, what this means for the industry, what this means for brands and manufacturers. And then in July 2019, the FSA asked the Committee on Toxicity to do an initial assessment on the safety profile of CBD. You'll hear a lot in this recording about data and the lack of data. The main thing is to produce the data to say that CBD is safe. And the initial scoping paper from COT just concluded that there wasn't enough data to categorically say safe or unsafe. In the meantime, the industry's just sort of been in this grey area, in a bit of a limbo, waiting for any enforcement notes, waiting to see how the local authorities and trading standards from those authorities would be enforcing novel foods. And really, you didn't really have much of an incentive for companies to go through novel foods because essentially it's just a glorified safety assessment. You've got to invest in genotoxicity and toxicity studies and potentially some more extensive studies further down the line. But if I'm a CBD brand or a manufacturer and I'm about to become novel foods compliant or do all the work, but the company next to me isn't and nothing's happening, There just wasn't much incentive. So for the past 12 months, the industry's, you know, we've been taking our members down the novel foods route because being a compliant company in this space is non-negotiable. But for the wider industry, there just wasn't that much of an incentive. So we really welcome the FSA statement to provide this clarity, and it's exactly what the industry needed. We've got a hard and fast deadline. We know what we need to do. Let's just be clear that this is not to have your application in by March, but it's to have your data validated by March 2021, which are two different things, which Sarah and Parveen will talk about in a bit more detail. So really, it's great that the FSA have said, here's what you need to do by this date. We're out of this grey area. The industry can move forward and really focus on proving the safety of CBD. You know, Professor Bobis, the chair of the Committee of Toxicity, just said, you know, we cannot ascertain the safety of CBD one way or another. And from a regulator's point of view, until you can, it's fair enough that you ask the industry to produce the data to prove that it is safe.
Yes. So the new guidelines came out of the Food Standards Agency stating that CBD products need some tighter guidelines around the use in food. So we know, and we've known for about a year now, that they're classed as novel foods, which means they need pre-market authorization before they should be sold. That is obviously not the case, certainly in the UK and in most of Europe. So the FSA have now come out with a statement that says that they are giving companies until March 2021 to get their novel foods application validated by EFSA before they will start enforcing or removing products off the shelves. They're also put down some guidelines based around dosage and recommendations for vulnerable groups such as pregnant women and children.
Okay, so those guidelines around pregnant women and children, are they essentially saying that they shouldn't use CBD?
Yes, so the guidelines suggest that pregnant women, breastfeeding women, children and those taking medication should not be using CBD.
Okay. Parveen, do you think that March 2021 gives enough time for these companies to gain this pre-market authorization?
I pretty much think so. We had a novel food declaration at the beginning of 2019. So any responsible industry or company working in this CBD space should have done their homework already and should have produced enough data regarding their process, regarding the stability, to put the novel food dossier together. And the novel food dossier requires all your manufacturing process information. Along with that, it is important that there is sufficient information regarding the safety aspect of the CBD, as well as the correct labeling, so that consumer is not misled by the inappropriate labeling. So these are the important criteria for that. Now we've been talking for over a year, and the FSA has given another year for companies to generate that data if they haven't generated so far. In my view, even if they start today, after the announcement, there is more than sufficient time regarding generating the data.
Show me, you mentioned a lot of companies didn't feel an incentive to get the required information, etc. Do you think that is the kind of main reason why a lot of companies haven't already got that necessary information required under the new guidelines?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, if I tell you that you've got to go through a novel foods application process, but at the same time, I'm not making it clear what will happen to you if you don't, I think it's fair enough for the industry to wait to see what the ramifications of not being compliant are. And hence why you've not seen a mad scramble to produce applications. I mean, our members, we've been sort of taking this through this journey since last year. And we're now starting to see, you know, since the announcements was made, a lot of companies getting in touch to produce this data and get an application in.
In general, what I am feeling is that companies who are in this food space, they had a lack of knowledge. And I think genuinely I felt that talking to the CBD producers, they have not got sufficient knowledge to generate this appropriate data. And that's where ACI comes in. And we put a platform for these companies to become our members so we can give them the appropriate guidance to generate that data.
So you say it's guidance that you provide. Is that telling the companies what they need to do, or is it giving them an accreditation once they do it, or how do you mean in that sense?
We had a partnership with GRS, that's why Sarah Gaunt is there, and the GRS are giving them the information and assisting them in compiling the novel food dossier. What ACI are doing is assisting them. What do they need to do in this space? How they need to generate the novel food application? How they can be the compliant and being a regulated industry? In order to do so, we are assisting also via our ACI auditing platform, which we are in process of establishing. The ACI auditing platform is generated to assist companies to ensure their facility is compliant and they have appropriate manufacturing processes which are catering for HACCP regulations, GACP regulations, so that the product, the finished product, they meet all the regulatory requirements.
So our goal is to create a safe, ethical, and ultimately compliant industry. You've seen so many news articles recently of CBD products being mislabeled, not having the milligram content they should do, having trace amounts of THC. You know, you've got a £500 million industry, or near enough a £500 million industry in the UK, which shows there is a demand and appetite for it, but there are just no quality measures around the industry, not widespread anyway. So when people go into their high street store and pick up a bottle of CBD because they've heard from a friend that it's, you know, it's helping with stress or with sleep or whatever the reasons are that people use CBD, and it doesn't work, or they say, oh, you know, I didn't have the same effects as you did, Is that down to the product, or is that down to how it was manufactured, or how it was tested, or how it's been stored? We just don't know. There are no quality measures. There's no standardization across the industry. And we're just looking to bring consumer confidence back to the marketplace. We did a YouGov poll when we launched the ACI in November, and 48% of the population weren't confident that the CBD products were what they said they were. There's a huge opportunity there to bring that confidence in, but as it stands, it's a pretty sorry state of affairs. In terms of accreditation, the ACI was founded on a 7-pillar quality charter that looked at all aspects of the industry, supply chain, marketing, sustainability. So we built our charter as a sort of self-regulatory framework, the first one being legal frameworks. You know, all companies must adhere to the laws and whatever regulations apply to their local markets, hence why we're here talking about novel foods. And we're helping companies by working with GRS and helping them prepare their submissions and dossiers. The second pillar is testing, which is another huge, huge issue the industry faces because of the lack of standardization. So Parveen's doing a lot of work on creating standardized methodologies for testing, working with some of the biggest labs in the world and working with the government to help them with their problems. You know, if you get a product seized for THC, but there's no standardization, you could go to another lab and say, well, actually, there isn't any THC. And that creates a big problem for the Home Office. So we're working with the government on testing and helping them come up with a standardized protocol. The third pillar is labeling. We've all seen a lot of quite confusing labels out there, milligram percentage-wise, etc., etc. We've gone off the Advertising Standard Authority's guidelines to help companies be really clear to the consumer. The fourth pillar is manufacturing. CBD is quite a special compound and not your usual compound to mix with and manufacture with. It takes quite specialist skills. So we take a look at your manufacturing supply chain and see if it's being done right. The fifth pillar being controlled substances, you know, no THC or CBN for the UK. The sixth pillar is marketing ethics. So just being as clear as you can about what's in your product, where it's come from, the supply chain. And the seventh pillar being sustainability and social impact. So looking at your supply chain and trying to align it with the UN Sustainable Development Goals, especially to do with manufacturing. We've created an independent audit committee, which we audit our members against these seven pillars. And then we reward them this kite mark. So that's the accreditation side of things, which will be launching at the Grocers Global CBD Summit in March. And this kite mark really is—it's all about trust. It's if you see the ACI kite mark on a product, you know it's legal first and foremost. You know it's been tested properly, manufactured properly, and also giving retailers the opportunity to see what a quality, safe, legal product looks like. Because a lot of the negative news stories right now are high-profile brands in some of the biggest retailers. So this is showing us as a group that the retailers are really struggling to identify what a quality CBD product looks like. Trust is a big, big word here. We're trying to bring trust back into the industry.
So do you see the ACI kite mark as a kind of way to stand in good stead for the FSA validation, or do you see the FSA validation as a step towards having the appropriate measures to gain the ACI kite mark?
Bit of both, to be honest. Let's say novel foods didn't exist, we'd still have to comply to all the local regulations for the market that we operate in. Because we've focused so much on compliance, I think that's what's helped our discussions with the FSA. You know, we've been in intense discussion with them for the past 12 months about novel foods, saying how can we ensure that there is a proportionate strategy on enforcement based on novel foods, and pegging it to the official milestones in the novel foods process makes a lot of sense. And this is, we gave them our thoughts and they gave us their thoughts. So the FSA coming out with this statement just vindicates all the work that we've been doing for the past 12 months. We of course want to work very closely with all the regulators to make sure the industry can grow in a safe and compliant way, and to bring that 48% figure down.
Yeah, no, it's great to see two major players collaborating so positively for the industry. It's something that's been needed for a while, and it's, as you've mentioned, it's definitely very welcome. So, Sarah, coming back to you, obviously there's several different kind of areas that a company needs to abide by to be allowed the pre-market authorization, but how can they almost validate that information? How can they say, yes, no, we do have this, and prove it almost?
So the novel foods process, the key factor is it's a safety assessment. So you need to demonstrate through your manufacturing and show that you are manufacturing to a high enough standard. You've got things like a HACCP plan in place, which shows that you're controlling the critical points so that your product coming out at the end is high quality and always consistent. And then there's the main issue, which is the safety of CBD, which has not been proved at food levels and for use day after day as you would do in a food product. And what companies really need to do who've got these ingredients is to do some robust toxicology studies, GLP, which is good laboratory practice studies, which will demonstrate the safety of the ingredient. If you can cover off manufacturing control and safety of the ingredient and stability of your product, so your product's going to be sat on a shelf for a certain length of time, if you can show that the ingredient that we've now proved is safe, is stable in that shelf life and in that format, then that all builds a really robust dossier that can go in and be hopefully given that pre-market approval.
Okay, so is it up to the brands to go to the FSA with their novel food dossier, or is it up to the FSA to go out to brands and say, do you have the correct test?
It's up to the food manufacturers, the brands, to present their safety data, and at that point, once you've presented your safety data, you've put your application in, the European Food Standards Agency will do a risk assessment and say, yep, based on all your data that you've given us, your product is safe, you are approved for sale. Post March 2021, companies that are not on that list, who've not got that approval, or products that are not on that list and do not have that approval, may well be taken off the shelves by the Food Standards Agency.
We need to clarify what the validation means as well. So what I want to add on that front is, according to the novel food dossier requirement, it is important that any novel food is contributing to providing a sufficient data regarding the safety, as well as that it's not misleading to the consumer for the labeling as well. In order to do that, it is a requirement for the supplier of CBDs to generate all that data and submit that data to the FSA, and then FSA will go through that data to ensure that it meets all their requirement, and that's when their application will be validated.
Okay, so it's the companies will send the FSA all of the necessary data that is required, then the FSA will trawl through that, which may take some time, I'm guessing. So when should a company start to apply all of this new regulation? When should they start to try and get all of the correct information and evidence and go through all the protocols to make sure they have the authorization before March 2021?
They need to apply as soon as possible. They need to gather that data and submit their application as soon as possible.
Okay, yeah, so no time like the present.
Yeah.
I think Parveen made a good point that it's important to clarify that post March 2021, we don't expect, and the FSA doesn't expect, applications to have been approved. They just need to have been validated, because the approval process by EFSA can be sort of 16 months just once you've put the application in at the very shortest. So that's kind of in the EFSA, European Food Standards Agency's ball's court then. But if you've got enough quality data that your application's been validated, then that is what EFSA is looking for.
Okay, yeah. So it's the European Food Standards Agency, but as of December 31st, 2020, the UK will no longer be part of Europe. So do you think it's appropriate that we are using European standards to monitor the UK market?
You know, I really feel that people are missing the point. It's nothing to do that we left the European Union. It's all to do with consumer safety and consumer confidence. So we need to make sure the product which you are bringing to the market meets the confidence of a consumer. They are safe for consumer and they are not misleading the consumer. Whether we are in UK or whether we are in Europe, it's immaterial. It's a benefit for the consumer. Doesn't matter where you are.
Agreed. And I think it's also important to point out that if you want to do business in Europe, you need to abide by the European legislation. So companies in the UK that want to sell into Europe will have to have this approval anyway. And post-Brexit, the FSA have already stated that they will employ a very, very similar novel foods approval system. So it's going to be the same in the UK as it is in Europe to try and smooth those trade barriers so that we don't have one system in the UK and one system in Europe for companies who are selling in both territories to have to do different things and jump through different hoops. It's going to be very similar.
Yeah, it'll make the European market much more accessible to UK businesses if they are already abiding by that set regulation, I guess.
Exactly, yeah.
And add to that also is that the FDA in US are going through the same challenges and the issues. So it is benefit for the suppliers of CBD industry or people working in the CBD spaces to generate that data so that their product is internationally, globally acceptable.
So is the US FDA regulation fairly similar to the FSA? As in, did the FSA appear to have based their kind of regulation on what the FDA have already done, or do you think it is completely separate?
Yeah, they're separate, but FDA says, you tell me that you've got enough evidence that your product is safe, we will give you the authorization. But the European and UK regulation, the way they work is that, yes, you prove me that product is safe, and then we will give you the authorization.
Okay, so it's about having that proof, that hard evidence, those lab results, those tests and everything like that. Okay.
Yeah, so the brief timeline that I gave at the beginning, you'd imagine, and rightly so, there was quite a lot of frustration from the industry, you know, asking the FSA, what are we doing? Do we need to do a novel foods? Is there going to be any enforcement? But actually, if you look at what's going on around the world, CBD is a problem for a lot of more mature markets than us. In Canada, it falls widely under the recreational marijuana regulations, not as an over-the-counter food supplement. In the States, you've got this patchwork state-by-state approach, and on an FDA level, you know, the hemp farm bill was passed, but that's more at the cultivation level, and you had 15 companies served with a notice for making unauthorized health claims. So with the FSA setting out a deadline and a clear route to compliance and focusing on generating the data for safety, they've actually been quite proactive in a regulatory sense and sort of could shine the light for other agencies struggling to fit this under a regime.
With America, like you say, it's kind of split up state by state. It could almost be seen similar to Europe, where the European Food Standards Agency is the equivalent to the federal level of regulation in America, but then each country does still have its own regulation, like the kind of state-by-state differences.
Yeah, so novel foods is a European-wide diktat, but it's up to each member state on how they enforce. So some countries have enforced this quite aggressively. Others just have sort of left it alone, waiting to see what happens in other markets. But you do have, you know, the FDA is a really good example, because the CBD market is much bigger, it's a bit more mature, and they're in exactly the same boat as our regulators. They're reviewing the safety, they're reviewing the data, because it just isn't out there. So they're in the same boat as the FSA. So for the FSA to come out and give hard and fast guidelines on how they intend to enforce and using a pre-market authorization model retrospectively, it's actually quite commendable and really, really welcome news for the whole industry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You mentioned there that some countries are enforcing this kind of novel food regulation more than others. Would you say that the UK are one of the more strict nations in that?
The UK is in a bit of is a bit different to other member states, just because you've had such explosive growth in the market. The problem the regulators have had is that they just haven't been able to sort of keep up with how quickly this thing has grown. The media seem to be quite well versed in it. You know, every week you'll see something in the BBC, Guardian, other Times. You know, little short documentaries on BBC. This is fueling the clamour for it amongst the public. You know, the fact that it's a compound from the cannabis plant just means that everybody's got an opinion on it, whether they take it or not. So all these factors create this perfect storm where you had absolute explosive growth, £350 million market when we did our market sizing exercise last year. It'll be bigger now. And a lot of people getting therapeutic benefits from it. So because of that, I think we were in a position where we couldn't just enforce a blanket ban like other markets have, because there would have been too much pushback from the public. But at the same time, as one of the sort of world leaders in food safety, we couldn't have sat back and done nothing. So this proportionate approach and this pragmatic approach is, yeah, like I keep saying, very, very welcome.
So what studies are required? What makes up that dossier?
So in terms of studies that will need to take place, there are studies around characterising your product and understanding exactly what's in it and showing that batch after batch, so five batches they will look at, are consistent and have the same amount of everything in there. You know what impurities you've got, you know what active ingredient you've got, you know you've got a fully characterised product. Then you move on to safety data, which is all around proving that the product is safe. So there's a number of levels of toxicity data. So we're looking at starting with sort of genotoxicity data, moving on to subchronic use data, which is looking at usage over a long period of time, which you might get with food. And these are all done at the dose levels that you would expect to find in a food product, using the actual food, your actual product itself. And you can show that the safety is there and that repeated use does not cause any major issues. These are the kind of studies that you're looking at. You're also looking at a study that shows the stability of your product over the shelf life. Now, things like stability and characterization, companies who put products on the shelves, regardless of whether it's a novel food or a normal food, should have that data. You should know that your product is stable for the entire shelf life. You should know what your product is. So these are not things that are above and beyond what is expected of a food manufacturer and what I think consumers expect of a food manufacturer. The additional thing for novel foods that have not been consumed or there's not a history of consumption is proving that it's safe and proving that if someone takes this product every day, you have a gummy every day or a tincture every day or repeatedly, it's safe and it's not going to damage your... So there is some talk of liver toxicity with CBD. So we just need to prove in food dose levels and in food products that is not a problem. And we've proven that through safety studies.
We need to look at the holistically as the whole supply chain, literally from your raw material to your finished product. So there should be a clear, transparent visibility and traceability of your whole supply chain. And that also ties in with what is your batch-to-batch variation. I had so many times people telling me that they've been using one brand of CBD, which was effective up to now, then all of a sudden that batch is not effective. They don't know, they don't understand the reason. And that variation of the process, batch-to-batch variation or seasonal variation, people need to understand their manufacturing specification ranges. Very important that all the specifications of their process have the ranges, and they understand the ranges, and that their stability is based on that. And most importantly, their method has to be stability indicating, which brings us down to the standardization and harmonization of testing methodology. So standardization and the harmonization of analytical methodology is also very important, and people need to ensure that their methods are stability indicating.
It's all about making sure that the entire supply chain from, and it's coined a lot, this phrase, but seed to shelf, every single aspect of the process ensures that stability and the safety for the customer. It's not about the final product on its own. It's about making sure it's correct all the way through.
That's right.
So, yeah, Sarah, you mentioned checking the long-term safety of using CBD, but how can we check the long-term safety?
In terms of food products, so what EFSA will do and what the European Union will do, even once a product, a novel food, has been approved, they will monitor the safety of that product. And if any issues come up, they will put a stop on those products being on the market. So there is a continuous monitoring. And obviously, we can't wait till we've got 10 years data before these products go on the shelves. What we can do is we can do some toxicology studies, which show actually we're pretty certain that in 3 months of feeding this product, this ingredient, we're not having major issues with any of our major organs. We're not having any real adverse effects. And based on that, which is standard laboratory practice, there are international guidelines of how to carry out these studies, and they're used routinely for food products, but also for drug products. We can give an indication that this product is safe, and that brings your risk levels of letting these products out onto the food market. That brings the risk down. So it's all about risk assessment. It's not about saying that this product will always be safe and there's never going to be a problem with it. It's about reducing the risk levels and saying that actually we've done these safety assessments. We're pretty certain that this product is safe. It will always be on a register and it will always be monitored, but we're pretty certain that it's safe.
Okay, yeah, no, that's fair enough. It's just a constant monitoring system of it all, which, yeah, completely makes sense.
You can't really eliminate the risk completely, because you need to have that data generated over a time. It's more about risk mitigation. Whatever information you have, you are risk assessing and mitigating the risks.
Yeah. It's making sure that there is as few and far between.
Yeah.
So in terms of the studies that you mentioned, can they be done collaboratively?
So there is the potential that you've got an extract or an isolate, a 96 to 98% pure isolate that's been produced by an ethanol extraction. Two companies are doing very similar processes and they've got a very similar end product. If they were to work together, there is a potential that they could do a collaborative safety study to prove that that isolate is safe. That's where you could go with collaboration. So if companies choose to work together and they know that they've got the same process, they can do collaborative approach. If you've got one raw ingredient supplier and they supply to lots of different companies who use it in their product, they can all work as a team and put a collaborative application in. So there are opportunities to work collaboratively, and we are encouraging that at the ACI, and we're encouraging supply chain collaboration. But then there's also a market advantage of you keeping your manufacturing route and your safety data proprietary, which if you keep that a secret and you put that into your application, you could get 5 years exclusivity on that novel foods approval. So there's a number of different ways to approach this. It really comes down to a business decision.
Could the raw material supplier gain approval through the FSA so that companies that use them just have to say, well, I'm using this approved supplier, so I'm okay?
Yeah, that would be the route, because it is really the raw ingredient that needs the safety analysis doing on it. So you would expect the producers to do the safety assessment and get the approvals on their product. The key thing that they need to bear in mind is that if you want to buy a product or someone who's got an approval, you need to ensure that in their application, your product, be it a gummy or a tincture, has been cited, and the stability data, so the proof that that raw ingredient, when you process it into a gummy, is not destroyed or broken down into anything unsafe, and that there is some shelf life data associated with that. You need to know that when you're buying off X producer, that their novel foods approval cites your use and has got that data in there.
Sarah made a very good point that a lot of companies, if there is a raw material supplier of CBD, and a lot of companies are using that raw material to make various finished products, they can all work together with that raw material supplier company to ensure that they can put that as a one application if they choose to. If they don't want to share their IP, still they can work semi-collaboratively. What I mean by semi-collaboratively is that parent company who is providing the raw material to them, they can do the parent application, but the end user of that key raw material companies generate the stability data of their finished product and tag on to the original application and submit their data.
So the FSA would require the novel food approval from everyone, essentially, everyone in the industry that is producing a part of a CBD product.
Yeah, you need to demonstrate that the ingredient that you're using is approved, and it is approved for use in your product.
There's been a lot of negative comments surrounding this press release saying that it seems daft to require this novel food authorization when a lot of people see CBD as not a novel food. So, like, what would you say to those people?
I would say that, yes, I agree that this product been on the market for thousands of years. People have been using various cannabinoids for thousands of years. I agree with that. But what people are not appreciating is there hasn't been sufficient scientific research into the safety as well as the standardization and harmonization of these methodologies. Because until now, internationally and nationally, it was in Schedule 1. There was a narcotic convention in 1960s, and then there was a psychotic convention in 1970s, and these all organizations were prohibiting to do more research in the cannabis area. So until 2018, we were not actually allowed to do more scientific work in this area because licenses were not given. And even to this date, Home Office are not issuing the licenses. They want to know, when you apply for a license, who's going to be your end user. That's the reason why I feel it should be considered as a novel food, even though we've been using it for the last 2,000 years.
No, that makes complete sense. Like you say, yes, we have been using it for thousands of years, but who's really ever actually known what's going on inside our bodies with the CBD? So, yeah, no, it's a step forward, definitely.
I think it's also important to note at this point that, yes, we've been using it for thousands of years, but we've not been using it in the extracted format that is now appearing on the shelves for thousands of years. We've been using whole plant.
Very, very good point, Sarah, on that, because they're using the whole plant. It comes with the entourage effect. And that is completely different from the isolated CBD, which is appearing on the shelves.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. So to gain the approval, I imagine it's a fairly expensive process to do all the tests and everything. So that high cost is surely a huge barrier for entry for smaller companies that potentially a startup or a company with less investment. So will this new regulation have a negative effect on the industry in terms of growth?
It may do for a couple of years. The key thing to understand is that once we've got a fair number of products approved, so raw materials that have been proved to be safe, then the industry, the innovation, I think, will pick up again. But I think we're at a point at the minute where we need to prove that those raw ingredients are safe. And the key thing to understand is those raw ingredient suppliers on the whole, are not the SMEs who are putting product into something innovative. They have got quite a lot of backing because they've got farms which are growing the cannabis and they've got extraction facilities. And the majority of raw ingredient suppliers are not the small players. The information that is required from the innovative companies who are making gummies or chocolate or teas is the data that you would need any responsible food manufacturer should have when they put a product on the shelves, which is characterization of your product and shelf life stability data. So I think that for SMEs to say this is going to stifle innovation and we're small and we can't afford to do this, if they can't afford to do stability trials to show that there's a reasoning behind their shelf life, they shouldn't be putting a food product on the market. That is data that they should have, regardless of whether your ingredient is novel or not.
No, I think you're spot on there. Like you say, if they can't afford to do the tests and everything and they don't do the tests, then why should their product be on the shelves and putting the public at a potential risk?
Yeah, because it's a risk beyond novel food. If you've not proven that the shelf life that you're putting on your product is true, you've not proven that there's not dangerous bacteria growing, you've not proven that there's other degradation products, not necessarily related to CBD. This is what we're trying to get across. Those SMEs should have this data anyway when you've got a product on the shelf.
I agree with Sarah that these companies shouldn't be in the market if they don't have the basic data requirement, which is the stability and the mycotoxin and the genotoxicity. They can generate that data. That should be there already. So people who are telling me that there isn't enough time, you should have that data already.
Yeah, it's a wake-up call to the companies out there that are potentially cutting corners, and they are the companies that are putting the safety of the consumer at risk.
If you look at how novel foods is approached, it is necessary for the supplier to go through all this, not necessarily the end product or the brand. And what that means is it's actually, you know, you've got this, like you mentioned, you've got this misconception that this is big, this is a big business play, this is locking out the smaller company. Well, actually, if the regulators are saying you need to pay for safety assessments, but it's only the suppliers of the raw material that do, it actually encourages suppliers to go through this so they can compliantly supply the smaller companies. There's this misconception out there that, you know, your little CBD shop on your high street that's just popped up, this family business, is going to get muscled out by these big North American LPs. And people seem to forget that they buy their products and white label them off these large American LPs. So I think it's actually good news for the SME sector. Within a relatively short time frame, you will have data to say, hopefully, that CBD is safe. You'll have investments in producing safety data. And that will come from the bigger companies that are supplying the smaller companies. So whilst it's not a free exercise, I think there needs to be a little bit more understanding on who must pay for these studies.
Yeah, it's almost like a trickle-down benefit from the top, if you like, if you class the top as a supplier. Once they have their validation and hopefully eventually authorization, that product will be validated, and so each person using that product is then partially validated themselves.
And then each company can buy their isolate or their distillate in confidence, knowing that it's safe and it's been tested and it's approved.
Yeah, and again, it helps build the trust that you were mentioning earlier. It's such a big thing at the minute in the industry. There needs to be that trust. So, yeah, makes sense.
Absolutely. You've got a total lack of clarity along the supply chain. And with the nature of novel foods applications, you will have that visibility, which again brings that trust back. And if we don't invest in safety, there won't be a market at all for, you know, for any size company.
A lot of people, well, like you said earlier, Sarah, about the potential liver toxicity. Do you think that that's scaremongering by media outlets that are less confident in this product? Or do you think, again, it relates back to the safety and it's a rather be safe than sorry kind of thing?
The statements about the liver toxicity come directly out of the Committee for Toxicology report, the COT report, which cited issues with liver toxicity. It's important to bear in mind that a lot of the data that they used when they did their risk assessment came from pharmaceutical products and at much higher doses than we would expect in a food product. Therefore, it's not really representative of the products that we've got on the market in food. However, there is no safety data on the products that we've got in the foods. So they've got to look at something. This is the data they've looked at. We can see the flaws in the data, but this is all they've got. So it's not scaremongering because it's come from a government risk assessment by the Committee of Toxicology, but it's probably based on data that is not necessarily representative of the products we've got.
Okay, yes, because I feel like I read somewhere that some of the products that they were testing contained levels of alcohol as well. So obviously, we all know that alcohol can have a negative effect on your liver. So again, like you say, it's about understanding the flaws of the data, but also understanding that there has to be something out there.
Exactly, yes, it was done on products that contained alcohol on groups that were not necessarily healthy groups of volunteers. So the data can be improved, but in lacking any data, this is the data we've got.
So let's hope that this new regulation will provide that data for the COT, and in a year's time, in a couple of years' time, we'll see a new report that will back CBD.
Exactly, yes. Hopefully we'll be able to generate some really high quality data.
100%. Obviously, this regulation focuses around the application for validation. So would any companies, and if so, then why, would a company or product receive validation but then not receive authorization eventually?
Oh, that's a good question. It could be a number of reasons. You know, you've got the data validation stage, but it could be slightly politicized. It could be the fact that other member states would like to see more data. We're in an unprecedented situation here where there's not a single market authorization under novel foods. So it's very much a case of let's see. You've got the added factor of Brexit. So the FSA have very much taken the lead and been proactive to say, we want to see the industry investing in generating safety data. We'll give you a date. And once you've generated that data, I think the playing field will be a little different then as well, just because it'll be after the transition period. The UK regulators will hopefully be satiated in their need for safety data. And once you've got the numbers in place to say CBD is safe categorically, I think you've got an entirely different conversation.
Yeah. So do you think it will take quite a while for the validation process to turn into that authorization process, because it will require that data to be gathered, including the long-term efficacy and safety of the product?
So the studies do replicate sort of accelerated conditions. As long as we can provide a baseline for the safety and continue to invest in safety studies, I think the regulators will be more than happy, considering the distinct lack of data right now. But just so we're clear, the data validation stage takes 9 months anyway, and then the commission have 7 months from a positive opinion to make a decision. So you've got a minimum of 7 months after the data validation. But as I say, Brexit is a complicating factor in all of this. So let's watch this space.
Yeah, no, 100%. Well, thank you very much for coming on and talking about this new regulation. I know a lot of people have been quite eager to get some clarification on it. Overall, a very good thing for the industry. It'll make it a lot safer. It'll mine out the less high quality brands, and it'll improve customer confidence and therefore their experience with the industry. Thank you for coming on and clearing that up for everyone.
No worries.
Thank you very much.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thanks again to Sarah, Parveen and Shomi for coming on and talking with me this week. I hope we managed to answer any questions you guys at home may have had. And I hope we've also emphasised that although this means stricter regulation, it is a very positive step forward for this industry. If you do have any more questions, then keep an eye out for our blog that will break down each bit of the FSA guidelines, or feel free to get in touch via our website, www.cbdrelief.uk. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast to keep up to date with the legal cannabis industry here in the UK. And as always, let's get some relief.